I got my peaches out in Georgia.
Oh yeah.
I get my from California.
That's that.
This is Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Vaccine certificates in Ontario. What's going on with that? Well, we're waiting. The government said something was coming this week. They were expected to roll out a vaccine certificate program, but now we're in a waiting period because the government had worked on something, but the premier reportedly didn't think it was acceptable. It wasn't up to snuff. Now they're back to the drawing board, doing a rethink. Sources telling CTV News Toronto that Ford's cabinet met for 2 hours last night to consider the proposed system, but they didn't approve it. Ford himself apparently not happy with it, calling parts of it draconian and saying that further work needed to be done, according to our Queen's Park Bureau Chief Colin DeMello. So the medical officer of health was scheduled to deliver a news conference at 3 p.m. today. Now that's been canceled. And the opposition is weighing in, including opposition leader Andrea Horvath of the NDP. She's charging that the premier is putting politics ahead of public health.
I don't know why Doug Ford is yet again laid off the mark. I mean, they should have had a plan in place already. They should be at the point where they're implementing that plan right now. And apparently they're in, you know, pitched political discussions about the vaccine passports.
Joining us now, infection control epidemiologist Colin Furness. Welcome back.
Good afternoon.
What is your impression of the situation?
Well, I think it kind of cements my perception that the biggest problem Ontario has is actually not Mr. Ford. It's not COVID itself. It's the decision-making apparatus that is cabinet. I think cabinet is a creature of idiocy, and we can trace a lot of decisions back. I think this is simply the latest one. It's not a fun assessment, but I think that's what it says to me.
Is it fair to make that assessment, though, or is it that they're trying to get it right, that they're sketching it out, they don't want to come out with something that's half-baked and then have to reel it back in and tinker with it or change it?
Well, let's be clear. There's two components here that need to be considered separately. One is the technology. What is it? Is it an app? Is it a piece of paper? Is it a plastic-coated card? What is the technology, and how can it be done in a robust way so that it is reliable, that it can't be easily forged? That's the technology of it, and we need that desperately. The other piece is the policy, which is now what rules are you going to put in place that make use of this? I suspect they're probably trying to solve both of them together. I don't think they're very good at decision-making when they're only trying to answer one question at the time. I think trying to answer two probably has them in a bit of a puddle. So I'd like to see the technology. Never mind the policy. We can argue about that. Let's get the technology going so at least it will enable the prospect of, under at least some circumstances, being able to ask people to demonstrate their vaccine status.
Putting aside the policy and the enforcement pieces for just a moment and just focusing in on technology, in your view, what sort of technology should we be going with? Something similar to Quebec, like the QR codes?
Well, I think I would probably need to spend more time looking at the Quebec system, at the BC system. We don't in Canada seem to want to learn from our neighbors, neighboring provinces that have sometimes done things well and sometimes not. So I think the first question ought to be, are they looking at those alternatives and are they looking at early responses to those? It doesn't have to be high tech, and when it is high tech, of course, you're possibly leaving behind all the people who can't keep up with that. That's a concern. There might be something to be said for sending everyone something in the mail that looks like a driver's license, you know, that's a plastic-coated card with your picture and hard to forge. I mean, that's something that you could provide to everybody. So, or maybe more than one solution. So I'm not sure there's one best way yet.
Mm-hmm. And what about the enforcement piece? I mean, how do you actually roll this out from a public health perspective to make sure that it is effective?
Well, there's two pieces, I guess. One is, how robust is it, or how hard is it to forge, to duplicate, to cheat? And then the other piece is, well, what penalties are you going to put in place? I'm not usually a law and order kind of public health person. I think you do better with advocacy and education. But the stakes are really high. There's a number of pretty violent anti-vax folks who I think are really determined to try and undermine any effort toward public safety in this regard. And so I think we probably need a bulwark there. We probably need to say, look, this is going to be counted as some kind of public mischief or something perhaps even a bit stronger. I'm not a lawyer or a corrections person, but I think we need that. I think we probably need to set some limits to say you can disagree with the vaccine, but there's limits to what you can do to torment businesses. There's limits to what you can do to lie or to misrepresent and to put people in danger. That's really where my worry is.
Given the current situation in Ontario as it stands today, tomorrow being the first day of September, how quickly do you believe we need a proof of vaccination system up and running?
I think we should have been working on this ages ago, and it was, again, a bit of an ideological problem, I think, for Cabinet. It's not clear to me that Mr. Ford has an ideology, but Cabinet certainly does. And the idea that we might use this to limit people's behaviors in some circumstances, I think, was a bit of a problem. It's ironic because lockdowns, of course, which the Cabinet has endorsed very heavily, are much worse. If you had to choose between being locked in your house or being issued a vaccine certificate, I think most people would say the vaccine certificate is a better choice and a more freedom-oriented choice. But Cabinet clearly is framing it differently.
Colin Furness, I want to read a text message because I got a couple of them to this end, similar sentiments being expressed. So I do want to raise it on air because people are continuously asking this question, okay? What does the passport really do? Asks this texter. Even if the vaccinated people catch it, they can transmit it, so what does it matter? This will give people a false sense of security and, you know, potentially it goes on and on and on. This person says, I'm fully vaxxed, but I do not support this. I believe it's a waste of time, effort, and money. And I just want to give you a chance to respond to that.
Sure, I've heard that. And it's that person is, I can understand their perspective because it's not going to change anything for them. They're vaccinated, or at least that's their belief. The fact of the matter is, right now, I think it is completely crazy to go and dine indoors in Ontario right now. I think that's incredibly reckless because you're going to be sharing air with people whose vaccine status is uncertain. And if you're vaccinated, yeah, you can get it. 20 times higher chance of going to the ICU if you're not vaccinated. So the vaccines make a really big difference. I would dine indoors if I knew that everyone else in there had been vaccinated. I would do that. I will not do that. Absolutely will not do that and won't condone it until we have that. So it's really very much about looking at gatherings in public and saying we want to limit transmission among the unvaccinated and also among the vaccinated too, even though outcomes tend to be a lot better. The way to do that is to say when there's a gathering. I'm not trying to punish people who aren't vaccinated. I'm trying to keep people safe when they gather. That's the benefit right there. There's a secondary benefit, too, which is when you tell, let's say, men in their 20s who are the lowest vaccinated group, age sex group, when you tell them that, you know, if you want to go to the bar, you need to have that vaccine certificate, just like in BC, they start booking appointments to get shots. So the specter of the vaccine certificate for them apparently is enough motivation in many cases, and that makes us all safer as well. So those are two pretty big benefits, I think.
Colin Furness, thanks so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure, thanks.
Colin Furness, infection control epidemiologist, waiting and talking about the need for a vaccination certificate program in Ontario, stressing that the technology needs to be reliable so that it can't be forged, that we need to have policies in place, and he believes this needs to be done now, that it needed to be done quite some time ago, but here we are right now. And I want to play a clip of CTV's Queen's Park Bureau Chief, Colin DeMello, because I chatted with him earlier today about what is going on behind the curtains at Queen's Park. And he said Ford apparently was not happy with the work that has been done and asked for further work to be done.
So it seems like the government put the cart before the horse here because they made the announcement about this upcoming announcement before the proposal had even been put to cabinet ministers. And some cabinet ministers, they saw this proposal for the first time yesterday during an afternoon news, an afternoon cabinet meeting. So it seems to me like they are all aligned on the fact that there needs to be a vaccine passport or the fact of what the vaccine passport might look like. There isn't really a lot of argument there. It's how far do they go with the vaccine passport?
We'll chat about that coming up with our political heat panel. We've got three different people standing by, Conservative, Liberal, NDP, and we'll talk about that news. We'll also talk about the latest on Afghanistan, Conservative leader Erin O'Toole saying he'll balance the budget in the next decade.
You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
My colleague Ted Raymond has been looking at the numbers, COVID-19, and also vaccination coverage in Ottawa and Toronto. He's a digital multi-skilled journalist with CTV Ottawa. And Ted, it was interesting because as you were looking at the numbers, you saw a trend emerging in Toronto when it comes to their coverage among young adults. What stood out to you?
Hi, Chrissy. Yeah, this was very interesting. So I noticed that according to Toronto Public Health, they've done what Ottawa hasn't been able to do, and based on, you know, the provincial data, what other public health units have not been able to do. Toronto Public Health is reporting that 99% of 18 to 24-year-olds and 91% of 25 to 29-year-olds have their first shot, and more than 80% of that age group is fully vaccinated, which is well above the provincial average and well above where we are in Ottawa right now.
That's a pretty crazy level of coverage. Have they said to you or explained in Toronto exactly how they've been able to get to that?
Well, I haven't really been able to get a reply yet from Toronto Public Health. I have reached out to them. They probably won't be able to get back to me today, I was told, but obviously it was a little bit later in the day when I sent them an email. But I was discussing this earlier with a colleague of mine from CTV News Toronto, who had said that they were speaking with a local counselor who says that young people have basically just been stepping up in that city. Of course, Toronto was the hardest hit city, you'll recall, during the pandemic in Ontario. They were on the longest lockdown. So it very well could have been just a case of people stepping up and getting the shot to prevent any future lockdown. But in terms of actual, you know, policy, it's hard to say at this point in time.
Well, I did see today that Toronto Public Health is expanding their mobile vaccination efforts. So they're hosting upwards of 200 clinics every week, and they're doing it at shopping malls, parks, transit stations. Those are pretty high traffic area where you'd have people possibly coming through, passing by, that don't know about the clinics.
That's really interesting. And I'm also seeing what Ottawa Public Health has to say. I mean, Ottawa Public Health has been doing community vaccination hubs, and they offer mobile clinics to businesses that request them. But this announcement from Toronto that they're going to be doing clinics at grocery stores, transit stations, 200 a week, I mean, that's a real, that's a really ambitious plan to really micro-target just about anybody who's going anywhere in the city. And it may be interesting to see, I don't know if Ottawa even has the resources to do something like that, but it would be interesting to see if we could maybe follow on that model a little bit.
Yeah, it'd be interesting seeing if Ottawa Public Health is even interested in this. Have they said anything about it?
Well, I've reached out to them as well, still waiting on a reply for that. But we know that Ottawa has been asking young people to step up and get vaccinated for many weeks. It's been a lagging indicator among 18 to 29-year-olds. About 74% in the city have their first shot, and 64% are fully vaccinated, which is roughly in line with the provincial average, which is what makes Toronto's numbers stand out so starkly. You know, how they managed to get 99% of 18 to 24-year-olds is really impressive.
It's a pretty astonishing number. Ted Raymond, thanks so much for flagging this.
Hey, you're welcome. And we'll be working on this. If we get any more information, we'll be on CTVNewsOttawa.ca.
Perfect. Ted Raymond, digital multi-skilled journalist for CTV Ottawa. It makes you wonder if Ottawa Public Health is going to take a cue from Toronto and do whatever the heck it is that they're doing to get the coverage among young adults to that level. 426. So we're day 17 now of the federal election campaign. And at a virtual news conference today, the new Grand Chief of the Assembly of First Nations was being asked about the election campaign. Roseanne Archibald saying that she's not going to step into it or endorse any party in the federal election. She says she has a plan to remain nonpartisan both during and after the campaign.
I commit to working with all parties after the election to ensure that Canada does all that it can to help us to heal and create stronger First Nations, justice, equality, and equity, which will lead to a stronger Canada for us all.
She was also asked about the fact that the Canada flag has been at half-mast on all federal buildings since May, following the discovery of unmarked graves on the grounds of former residential schools, or I should say following the finding, because we did know that these graves were out there. But that is when they were actually in the news. That's when they were actually found. Conservative leader Aaron O'Toole has said that he thinks it's time to raise the flags back up and be proud of the flag, as Canada can continue to work on that and work on reconciliation with Indigenous people. And Roseanne Archibald was asked about that. What do you think of his comments? Where are you in this discussion? She says if the flags are kept lowered one day for every child found, they'd stay at half-mast between 11 and 17 years.
So I think that the longer that the flags remain at half-mast really honors these children, honors our little ones, honors our families, honors our communities.
428 on Ottawa Now. You're listening to News Talk 580 CFRA. When we come back, we'll talk about the wait for a vaccine certificate program in Ontario. What are they coming up with behind the scenes? We'll talk about the various promises on the campaign trail today. Erin O'Toole talking about balancing the budget in the next 10 years with the Conservatives, the Liberals focusing in on mental health. That's next.
The more that you say, the less I know.
You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
439, welcome back. Lots going on the campaign trail today, and we'll get to that in a moment. But first, in Ontario today, a lot of anticipation, a lot of questions as we wait for news on a vaccination certificate program. They've been working on it. Apparently, the provincial government came up with something, but Premier Doug Ford didn't like it. So back to the drawing board they go. Sounds like they wanted a more thorough proposal. What was the issue with it precisely? We don't know. But whatever was presented was not what the Premier wanted. So how much longer is it going to take them to cobble something together? In the end, what will the end result be? What will the system look like? What kind of a system? What kind of technology? What kind of a format? Joining us now to talk about it, our Political Heat panel.
Now, Political Heat on News Talk 580 CFRA.
David Scheindling joins us, associate at Jenny Byrne and Associates. Richard Mahoney, managing director of Macmillan Vantage Policy Group, and Cameron Holstrom, consultant at Blue Sky Group. Hello, everyone. Welcome.
Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
Good to get you on the show. I'll start with you, David. What do you make of this delay?
So I really think what this is, Chrissy, is it's an attempt by the government to get the balance right, right? We can look across the country at different provinces that have implemented this plan, and there's been hiccups along the way. Quebec had its system hacked. BC's having a staged rollout that is being scrutinized at every step of the way. And this government is taking a cautious approach, as it is with the reopening. And we've seen that even with the reopening plan, Ontario is doing what it needs to do to make sure it strikes the right balance and keep people safe and make sure that the population isn't at risk. And I think that's what they're doing here.
Richard, David says they're trying to get it right. That's why they're taking their time. They're going back. They're coming up with some sort of a concept. How do you feel about it?
I'm sure that's at least partly true, but let's just remember up until literally a week or two ago, or up until literally a few days ago, the Premier and his minister were adamantly refusing to do anything like a vaccine passport. Prime Minister Trudeau has been pushing that since the beginning of the election campaign and before. He even made money available to get provinces that are dragging their feet on this, like Ontario, to help them out with money to do this. The problem with this is the following. If we're going to reopen safely, we need to have everybody vaccinated, and we need to have a passport so that people can do things, non-essential things, like going to the gym, like going to a concert, like going to restaurants, indoor things and things like that. We know that everybody's safe. That when we do that, we will have a return to normal as best we can, even as we fight out the rest of this pandemic and finish the job on it. But also we'll be safer, safer from disease, safer from infection in the community. And for the life of me, I don't understand why ideologues like Mr. Ford drag their feet on this. I mean, the only good news I see is at least it looks like they may be coming around to do something, which is what they should do.
Cameron.
Well, I can't help but note the fact that supposedly there was reporting out there that officials were planning for such a thing back in April, until the government and this premier told them to stop, because that was not going to happen in this province. I'm concerned about the fact that this hasn't happened. My daughter started school today, and none of that's in place. And to me, there's no excuse for this. And this has been the pattern of this government the whole way along. it's been slow walking to eventually getting to the right position, and him and then Hahn and refusing and finally being dragged, kicking and screaming to do the right thing. And frankly, it's tiresome. It's bothersome. And especially when more and more people are showing that they want this. You know, ECOS had some interesting polling out today along with their national campaign on people's demand or acceptance of vaccine passports. And you've seen it jump about 20% across the board from in the low 40s, so sorry, in the mid-40s to the into the 50s, up into now at the low 60s, the 70s, even the 80s in some cases, for approval for vaccine passports to access certain things or do certain things. So, you know, we're going to end up here anyway. And in the meantime, how long is this going to take? Are we have to wait for the full-blown fourth wave to arrive here before the government finally does something and it's too late, as they've been the whole way through? It's frustrating because, again, it's like, look, this is not that complicated. It's really not. Quebec got it done. You know, like, do we really need to totally reinvent the wheel in doing this? So that just tells me that Premier Ford had something put before him that he really, really, really didn't want to do. Some of the reporting was that it was too stringent, it was too hard. Well, you know what? That just tells me that he wants something weaker, more ineffective, and more for show. And that's the last thing we need right now.
David, do you not think we run the risk, and I know they're trying to strike a balance here, but if they create something that tries to please everyone, then it ends up being flimsy and creates too much confusion or room for confrontation and bickering, and then they just end up having to go back and fix it later on?
So, Christy, what I would do is I'd point you to two examples in this government. First would be the Fall Preparedness Plan that was released in the fall of 2020. Everyone said that that plan was too comprehensive and it touched too many bases. We basically had eliminated flu because of the comprehensive flu preparations we had put in place. We had injected billions of dollars into the hospital sector to prepare it for whatever wave came our way. And thankfully, we brunted every wave that came to the province. I would also add that the second example of that is the reopening plan. Everyone said that this reopening plan, if it wasn't coming out, if it wasn't comprehensive, didn't touch all the bases, we wouldn't be able to enjoy a good summer. And the plan that's been put in place is comprehensive enough that it's allowed us to basically return to almost what life was like pre-pandemic. I mean, obviously, there's still some capacity restrictions here. But also the fact is that things can return to where they were pre-pandemic. You can go to the backyard. You can have a barbecue. You can go to a restaurant. You can go to a nightclub even now. You can go to a Jays game. I'm saying this government is taking its time with making sure that it covers all its bases and ensures that every aspect is covered. The other point to mention, too, is that I don't know it's so much of Premier Ford having an apprehension to a vaccine passport, more so that the CMOH has even said it wasn't necessary. There's no need to have a passport. And there's been no scientific data from the science table even that says it would prevent a fourth wave. If a fourth wave is going to come, it's going to be driven by unvaccinated individuals. And so what this passport really is to drive up vaccination numbers to ensure a greater level of protection across the province. And I think that's what happened. I think the CMOH went to Premier Ford and said, listen, our vaccination numbers, I don't think are high enough now with the data that we have on Delta, and we need to introduce new measures to drive up these numbers. And I think that's
okay,
what happened.
4:46, we could go on this all day, but I do want to get to the campaign trail. Let's start with Conservative leader Erin O'Toole saying that he'll balance the budget in the next 10 years without cutting any federal programs.
We will grow the economy so that we can get back to balance in a responsible and equitable way without cuts. That is our plan.
Statistics Canada says the economy shrank in the second quarter of this year, and he's blaming Trudeau's Liberal government for that. Richard Mahoney, what do you think of this plan?
Of Mr. O'Toole's plan?
Correct.
O'Toole's plan. I mean, the funny thing is that, of course, in the last election campaign and every day since, conservatives put out memes of Justin Trudeau making fun of similar statements that he said in the 2015 campaign.
The budget will balance itself.
Yeah, and in the meantime, we have had to do the extraordinary expenditures that COVID required, literally subsidizing the wages of over half of the Canadian economy. That's what the government of Canada did to make sure that we kept jobs and kept our economy alive until we got through the pandemic. The CERB, now called the Canada Recovery Benefit, which put money directly in the hands of people affected by this who lost work and lost their jobs and weren't able to recover anyway. So those things basically kept our economy alive as it took the massive hit of COVID. But those expenditures are much higher than they were when Mr. O'Toole and his fellow conservatives mocked Justin Trudeau for a similar promise. We've now had hundreds, so of course that's not going to happen, and it just makes it puts proof to the point that he's not going to balance the budget within 10 years if he becomes prime minister, unless he brings in cuts. Can it balance over time through economic growth? Of course it can. But no other economist, no other expert, not the certainly not any of the officers of Parliament who have looked into this, say it can be done in 10 years with no cuts to government spending. Can't be done.
Dave and Richard, going back to that comment from the Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, when he said the commitment needs to be a commitment to grow the economy and the budget will balance itself. Is it fair in your view to compare the two commitments?
No, to be frank with you, I think what people need to think back to is conservatives have balanced the budget before in economic crisis back when the Harper administration was in power.
Not so much, but we'll debate that later.
I would also point that Prime Minister Justin Trudeau also promised to balance the budget in 2015 and wasn't even anywhere close before COVID hit. So why would we trust him with a plan now in the midst of a pandemic?
Yeah, but the difference is that your leader is promising to balance the budget at a time when we've had to make these extraordinary expenditures, which begs the question, how are you going to do that without reducing the size and scope of government, i.e. and reducing services to Canadians? I mean, if it was difficult to do a few years ago before the pandemic, it's going to be more difficult now.
Cameron, you want to jump in here? You're laughing in the background.
I'm chuckling here because, we love, in the NDP, we love to talk about Liberal Tory same old story, and this is like a prime example of it. Yes, it is basically saying that the budget will balance itself magically. And when you give the example of Mr. Harper balanced the budget, yeah, he balanced it by cutting programs, cutting transfers, cutting this, cutting that. He didn't get there magically either. So it's like, if you're trying to have me believe here, say, look at the conservative record, we balanced budget, and say, well, you're not going to cut to balance the budget. Oh, I'm sorry, that's what you did to balance it last time. And let's be honest here. There are two ways you can balance a budget. You can either cut things or you can raise revenue. I give the Justin Singh and NDP full credit here. They're the ones who are actually saying, you know what, we're going to go after those who are going to look best off. We're going to go after those who are trying to cheat out and pay in their taxes. We're going to go after those who are trying to use offshore tax havens. I don't hear either of these two talking about actually going after people who are trying to cheat the system and throw the rest of it back on us. At the end of the day, let's face it, that's what cuts do. Cuts hurt everyday people who need the help. And if you're sitting here trying to tell me, oh, you're going to balance the budget without having to change the revenue side of it at all, I'm sorry, you're lying. That's a lie.
Okay, I want to talk about the NDP and their focus on home flippers, because Jagmeet Singh, the leader today, said they've got to increase the capital gains tax because people are pushing out first-time home buyers and people that are saving up for a house. And he said they're using the stock market, or the housing market, that is, like the stock market, and the NDP, if in government, would stop that.
We want to get big money out of housing. So if someone here in Port Moody, Coquitlam is looking to buy their home, they shouldn't have to compete with people with deep pockets that are gaming the housing market like a stock market. They shouldn't have to put up with that.
Will this actually help with housing affordability in our real estate market? Is this the right approach, David?
Yeah, so I'll use a personal example. Me and my wife actually were just purchased a home, and we're really looking at different areas and where we could afford and where we could buy. Thank you. What I would add to that is that I don't really think it's necessary. We weren't finding that there was someone trying to game the system when we were looking to buy a home. What we're finding is that there are thousands of other people looking to get into the market and looking to escape the urban centers and have somewhere that they can call their oasis. And what that really says is that there's a lack of supply. Not that there's people gaming the system or that there's someone taking advantage of what's currently in place. It's more so that there needs to be more supply, which the conservative platform does. The conservative platform by Mr. O'Toole looks to increase the supply as well as take advantage of what is currently available in the federal government's reserves for the housing and land development, and also making that available so more people can buy into areas that they, A, want to live in, and B, is affordable for their price range.
Cameron.
You know what? It's from both columns. Supply is an issue, but so is this. And where I live down here in Brockville, I've been seeing this firsthand. Not only are we seeing more people moving in from outside because they can't afford to live in places like Ottawa, you're seeing homes that have been turned into rental units being renovated and turned into single-family homes, driving up the value of that property to buy, but also then taking away rental stock from those who need it. This is part of the problem, especially in a lot of the larger centers. And There's a balanced construct here. Yes, you want people to invest in a home and try to upgrade it a bit, but there's not a problem I see in that. But you do see people who are buying it just to do it and sell it. And that is a problem, because that then gets a vicious cycle going. But yes, you need also have the housing stock side, which is why the NDP is the only ones putting on the table half a million publicly funded starter homes and whatnot for people to actually get into the market. Because I think that's the key thing. You don't, there almost isn't an entry level anymore into buying into the housing market. And I know, like, and I know that's hard for a lot of people trying to get in. And let's face it, that is the greatest way to build wealth in this country, is to buy a home and build equity in that. And if you can't do that, you are way behind, you're put way behind the ball.
Cameron, I think the point to also make is that we need to ask ourselves as Canadians, what government in the past 6 years has done anything to alleviate this crisis? It's been on the horizon. It's been in the back burner. But yet this government of the Trudeau's has done nothing. It's been sitting there waiting for it to fester and swell into the situation it is now. And unfortunately, the pandemic hasn't, I would say, caused all of the issues, but it certainly exacerbated the problem. And I think that that's kind of the winds with change you're seeing in some of these polls, when some people say that they're looking for a different government to lead them, because they're looking for someone that offers a different alternative to nothing.
Right. Well, I was going to say that there were some fair points made by both sides until that last point there.
So, Richard, yeah, go ahead and jump in on what the NDP is saying, and then also, in your view, how it stacks up to what the Trudeau government has been saying about housing.
Right. So, first of all, I mean, I think to a certain extent, both of you are right on the problems. There is a supply problem, and we need to deal with that. There is a, and I think there are people who are essentially competing. I think Devin's wrong in the sense that I think that one of the reasons why in hot markets like Ottawa, Toronto, Vancouver, the things are going up so quickly isn't just because people like us are looking for homes, but it's because there are investors looking at this, and because it's one of the best things you can invest your money in, the safest things. So that's, we're competing. Singh is right to say that new home buyers are competing against everybody that's buying. So, I mean, I think you need measures on both ends, and the Liberal platform deals with that. But as far as resting it on the sort of last 6 years, anyone who knows anything about housing policy knows this is a problem that goes to every level of our government. The first problem, and I think actually, in fairness to Mr. O'Toole, his platform recognizes this, as does Mr. Trudeau's, is at the municipal level, we have issues at the planning side that make it difficult to increase the supply. That's the first thing we're going to have to do, is use the federal power of the purse to get municipalities to change zoning rules so we can build more supply. We're going to have secondly, as both my friend said and as Mr. Trudeau's platform calls for, we're going to have to address the social housing side. We're going to have to address that in a much more massive way. Typically, that's been on provincial governments and municipal governments have led the way on that. It's time for federal leadership on that, and they've been building on that for the last 4 years. Is this thing going to be solved in the next government's term? No, this is one of the biggest issues of our generation. It's going to take years to solve it. It's going to be at every single level. It's going to require both things on the demand side and on the supply side, to create affordable housing for the next generation of people. But it's a huge problem. It's an economic problem. It's a social problem. It's a quality of life problem. And that's, I think, one of the reasons why, if you listen to Mr. Trudeau for the rest of this election campaign, the things he's going to be talking about is finishing the job on COVID, rebuilding our healthcare system after the hit that it took because of COVID, and then dealing with the housing supply as best the federal government can help doing that. That and climate change are the four big jobs that the federal government has.
So I got to jump in here because I only have 2 minutes left, and I really quickly, very quickly, unfortunately, want to talk about the Liberal pledge, $4.5 billion for mental health. Here is the Liberal leader, Justin Trudeau, in Ottawa this morning.
This funding and this new transfer will mean everything from shorter wait times to more mental health professionals on the job. We'll also invest in 1,200 new mental health care counselors at colleges and universities and develop a distinctions-based strategy with First Nations, Inuit, and Métis people.
So $4.5 billion over 5 years in targeted funding for mental health. They didn't dictate how they'd deliver that support, but they said the funding would be delivered through a new permanent mental health transfer. And he was talking a lot about the pandemic and the toll it's taken on all of us. Davin, very quickly, your thoughts on this.
Yeah, I'll make it quick. And I just want to say that I think the O'Toole platform also deals with mental health in a new and innovative way. And I'll also add that you can look at a province here in Ontario led by a conservative government that has really put mental health at the forefront of its policies with the roadmap to wellness. And you can see that it's been implemented in a great way, and it's getting a lot of positive feedback. But what I'll also add is the fact that the Trudeau government hasn't committed to raising Canada health transfers. So why would we trust them to inject this money into our healthcare system in a thoughtful way and in a meaningful way?
Quick response from you, Richard.
Yeah, I mean, I think Mr. Trudeau announces today, because this is a growing issue, our healthcare system has taken, is cherished by all Canadians, has taken a hit over the course of the last 18 months. I have family members who are, you know, have dealing with that right now in the hospital, and, you know, it's tough in there. So the mental health has hit extra hard in the pandemic, so an increased transfer of money to the provinces and to the agencies that deliver mental health services is a great idea. It's the next step in building our healthcare, our system, is to build mental health in there. It's something that we've ignored, I think, too much. Our healthcare systems haven't dealt enough with mental health issues over the course of the years, and I think a lot of people recognize that, and I think the Prime Minister's announcement today is a welcome one with significant money being put to this, more significant resources being put to this for the next number of years. I think that's important.
And a final brief comment from you on that, Cam.
Well, as someone who's gone through his own mental health issues, I appreciate the funding, but I would point out that as much as COVID has put pressure on people with this, especially in my community, in the Indigenous community, this has been a crisis for long before this. Not just this government, but the prior government, the prior conservative government, children and youth killing themselves at rates far beyond the national average, and the supports have never been there to support them. I don't know if this quite helps with that, but I'm glad to at the very least see the government recognize that need help is there. And to see all three parties really pushing on this. But this, to me, you know, someone who went through it, I was lucky that I had private insurance through my employer, Life and Access. Mm-hmm. I know if I didn't have that, it would have been a much more difficult process if I wouldn't be able to get the help at all. So, yes, it's welcome, but we'll see if it actually comes to be.
Cam, Richard, Davin, thank you so much for coming on the panel today.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate
Thank you. On.
Davin Scheinling, associate at Jenny Byrne & Associates, Richard Mahoney, managing director of Macmillan Vantage Policy Group, and from Blue Sky Group, Cameron Holstrom. Your 5 p.m. news is now.